Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
We are to be stewards of the earth. But are some going overboard in trying to protect the environment at the expense of mankind? We see more and more regulations being handed down by the Environmental Protection Agency and through executive orders from the White House. Those add to our energy costs, food costs, our overall cost of living. Almost on a daily basis, we are warned that if we don't immediately address global warming, we will suffer the consequences, like melting ice caps that cause massive flooding and completely redesign our coast, forcing millions to flee the rising waters. If not that, then we'll all surely die from heat stroke caused by too many cows belching. We're told overpopulation and man's presence have been the major factors in creating these problems, but how factual are those accusations? My guest today is Dr. Calvin Beissner. He's the founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Thanks, Dr. Beissner, for being with us.
Well, thanks very much, Diane, for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure in the past, and I think we've got a great topic for today, especially with the release just this week of the new National Climate Assessment from the Obama administration.
Yeah. That was, what, 4 years? That's the fourth one?
And it's quite the propaganda piece. It really is. It goes so contrary to the observational science. It just continues to depend on the computerized global climate models that failed to hindcast the temperatures from the 1970s onward and way exaggerated the warming that happened from 1980s to 1997. August of 97 was the last real warming we had. We've had no warming since then. That's 17 years and eight months with no warming.
You said 17 years? Actually, I've got a quote here. I was looking for this quote. Last June, German climate scientist Hans von Storch, which I probably did not pronounce his name correctly, but he said that despite predictions of a warming planet, the temperatures for the past 15 years show an increase of 0.06, or very close to zero, and that is by 400 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere from human activities. He admits we're facing a puzzle. Recent CO2 emissions have actually risen even more steeply than we feared. And he says, as a result, according to most climate models, we should have seen temperatures rise by an average of 0.25 degrees Celsius. And I'm just thinking, what if the temperature rises 0.25 degrees Celsius over 10 years? That's
if you multiply that out for a century, that comes to 2.5 degrees Celsius.
And
at that point, we begin to wonder whether there might be some negative effects, although, frankly, a lot of the modeling suggests that negative effects wouldn't exceed positive effects until getting well over 3.5 or 4 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
But you know, the big deal here is simply that the computer models on which the projections of dangerous climate change, dangerous warming, proper term for it, those computer models have been falsified. All of them predicted that we would have actually about 1 degree of warming from 1980 to the present. Instead, we had about 0.4 degree from 1980 to 1997. And since 1997, there's been no warming. None of them predicted the absence of warming for the last 17 years and 8 months. And, you know, the test of any scientific theory, and computer models are simply theories put into mathematics, the test of any scientific theory is whether the predictions made on the basis of that theory match real-world observation or laboratory experimental observation. Here, there's no match. Over 95% of the computer models grossly overestimated the warming for the period. That means they're wrong, and consequently they can't be depended on for any forecasts in the future. And since those are the only grounds for the fears are in fact groundless. The actual conclusion of all of this is that CO2 added to the atmosphere has surely it has some slight effect on global average temperature, but certainly not the controlling effect mm-hmm. that the alarmists have claimed that it has. And we discuss this a great deal at the Cornwall Alliance, cornwallalliance.org, and also at facebook.com/Cornwall Alliance, our Facebook page. We have articles on this constantly, and we have a large number of scholars, including world-class climatologists, who work in this all the time. And the difference is they pay attention to the actual real-world observations, mm-hmm. not just
a model trying to guess. But you know, we have these alarmists who are saying that, like, 99.9% of the scientists agree that global warming is actually happening. So you're telling me that that's not true? I can't believe it.
Well, actually, what they claim is 98%.
Oh, 98%. Okay, that's a big difference.
But the claim is totally bogus. Yeah. I mean, it's been based on several attempts to infer from, say, the abstracts of peer-reviewed publications. But what happens is that they will count as agreeing with the hypothesis of dangerous man-made climate change any article that acknowledges that there's been global warming over the last 40 years mm-hmm. or something. That, of course, misses the point completely, because the whole question is, has human emission of greenhouse gases been the primary driver?
Right. One
of the surveys on which that claim was based concluded that they surveyed about 13,000, they sent the survey to about 13,000 scientists, and actually they wound up including the responses of only, if I remember correctly, it was 79.
79?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Carefully defined so that it practically made it impossible for anybody who was skeptical of man-made mm-hmm. dangerous climate change to be included in
yeah.
the survey.
Yeah.
And then they only asked them two questions. Has the world warmed since the mid-19th century? And second, has human activity had any significant impact on that? Well, my goodness, I would say yes to both
yes,
those
absolutely.
Questions, and so would every global warming mm-hmm. skeptic scientist I know.
Yeah.
So these surveys are totally bogus, and then besides that, consensus is not how you determine truth in
true.
Science.
That's very true.
Logic and evidence are the determinants of that.
Yeah. Now, Earth Day, they've been, quote-unquote, celebrating Earth Day for about 45 years. It's been held in the U.S. In April for about 45 years. Do you think yep. that something high schools and I believe also colleges, I'm not sure if it's in college, probably in colleges too. Anyway, do you think that Earth Day, celebration of Earth Day, has had an impact or has helped create an atmosphere of ultra concern for the environment?
Oh, sure. Now, frankly, the popularity of Earth Day has declined mm-hmm. in the last decade or so, but there's still millions of people around the United States and the world who pay attention to it, and it tends to be especially popular among young people,
yeah.
College students, mm-hmm. Sometimes high school students, but more frequently college students. And it tends to be driven by people who are into the movement, mm-hmm. but not really solidly into the scientific and economic evidence that needs to guide our understanding.
Okay. It's more of a feel-good type thing.
Yeah, it is. And, hey, there are some things that, frankly, we ought to be doing.
People
should, not waste electricity mm-hmm. by leaving lights on or by leaving fans
right.
on in the room or air conditioning on when you don't need it and so on. We should be recycling metals,
whenever
especially
possible, right.
aluminum or glass, various other things that mm-hmm. make good sense to recycle. Waste is not a good thing, and
true.
Obviously we should be careful about our use of chemicals and so on.
Yeah, I read something. Go ahead.
But the fact is that the environment in every developed country is much cleaner, much more healthful now than it was 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The air is cleaner, the water is cleaner, there's less solid waste going into solid waste landfills. Everything is cleaner, and that's easy to explain.
Yeah.
A clean, healthful, beautiful environment is a costly good, and wealthy people afford more of costly goods than poor people do.
True,
well,
true.
Our economies have grown.
Yeah.
The places where the environment is still in deep distress tend to be the poorest places in the world, sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Latin America and Asia, and especially places that are ruled by communist
dictatorships.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Those are where the environment is really suffering, and what's needed, especially in the very, very poor places like sub-Saharan Africa, is economic development, which can be driven by the availability of abundant, reliable energy.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
See, this is where the rubber meets the road, Diane, because, you know, we can talk theoretically, abstractly about these controversies about global warming and so on, but, you know, what does it really matter? Well, what it really matters is that the policies prescribed to fight global warming all involve reducing the use of the most abundant, affordable, reliable energy sources that we have. But everything that we do and everything that we produce requires energy. The rise in energy use, and particularly in carbon-based energy use, coal, oil, natural gas, is correlated almost perfectly with the rise in human life expectancy and the rise in human population. So it's energy that keeps people alive and that lifts them out of poverty. So if we're telling people in the developing world, hey, you can't do what we did. You can't use coal and natural gas to generate electricity in order to have widespread, reliable, low-cost electricity through a national grid, because that would drive global warming, then what we're doing is we're telling those people, you have to stay in abject poverty
in
for more generations, using wood and dried dung as your primary cooking and heating fuels, putting smoke from those into your air, in your huts, in your little villages. The World Health Organization estimates that that smoke alone kills something in the neighborhood of 4 million people every year from upper respiratory diseases, most of them women and young children.
Right, who are in there. Yeah, I read something where Bill...
It's just terribly unfair to the poor.
It absolutely is. I read something where the Gates Foundation, I think it was donating money to buy stoves or something for these little, you know, these villages rather than using
wood. Yeah, and, you know, that would be an improvement over what they're doing right now.
Well, true.
Burning over open fires. But the cost per unit of energy generated is sky high compared with the cost of you know, per kilowatt hour of electricity delivered over a grid from reasonably modern coal-fired or natural gas-fired generating plants.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so essentially we're asking these people to remain poor, and with poverty come high rates of disease and premature death.
Yeah.
We would never settle for that ourselves, and we shouldn't be asking them.
We should not, absolutely. As part of Earth Day, the University of Scranton here in Pennsylvania had a symposium which focused on water availability around the world. And they gave the startling statistic, 345 million people in Africa do not have access to viable drinking water, and which, you know, I totally believe that. But my thing is, you know, the U.S. is pumping money into Africa. Well, actually, the U.S. is buying condoms and dropping condoms into Africa and pushing that agenda and paying people to go into Africa to push abortion and same-sex marriage, where they should be spending that money on building up their infrastructure or giving the money to the governments or helping the governments to pay for what you're saying, something that would be able to provide good drinking water and, you know, better health care.
Yeah, purified drinking water and sewage sanitation, as well as the provision of electricity, are probably the three things that would do the most to deliver sub-Saharan Africans out of dire poverty and out of high rates of disease and premature death. And where that money should go is to very local governments rather than to the national governments, because the national governments, most of them are run by, frankly, thugs who pocket most of the money. But what we can do is we can work through especially Christian organizations with local connections there. The Cornwall Alliance has a sister organization called Churches and Villages Together that, that cooperates with local pastors on the ground for a combination of evangelism, church planting, pastoral training, microenterprise startup and development, and environmental restoration and protection projects that involved making these pastors self-sustaining through agriculture so that they can serve in remote villages in East Africa that that cannot support a pastor.
Right, that's great.
And these are ways that we can help people to rise out of poverty using their own initiative rather than creating dependency by money handouts like that. So Churches and Villages Together, CV Together at the web, cvtogether.org, it's a great place for your listeners to
go to find out more about
how to help that out.
What was that?
CVtogether.org.
CVtogether.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's great. I know that there seems to be some confusion among evangelicals when it comes to the issue of the environment. And in June 2012, more than 100 leading evangelical scientists, economists, theologians, and pastors endorsed a formal comment by the Cornwall Alliance, and it was sent to the United States Environmental Protection Agency,
yeah,
opposing its intent to put restrictions on carbon dioxide emissions from electric power plants.
Yes.
And comparing that. And then they just make CO2, classify that as a gas harmful to humans.
Pollutant.
Okay,
yes,
pollutant.
They did.
Okay.
And it's quite a strange thing, because as a matter of fact, CO2 is essential to life.
Yeah.
We need it in our own bodily biochemistry, because unless your CO2 level rises, your autonomic nervous system doesn't cause you to exhale, and so you would asphyxiate from having too little CO2. Plants, of course, ingest CO2. They use CO2 in photosynthesis. And in fact, with CO2 now at about 400 parts per million, that's about 0.004% of the atmosphere. That is close to the lowest that CO2 has ever been in geologic history. The lowest was probably what it was just before the Industrial Revolution, around 270 parts per million. At that rate, plants are literally starving for CO2. And the increased CO2, because of human activity, has solved some of that starvation of plants, and we actually are able to see a measurable greening of the planet going on, visible from satellite photography. Deserts are getting greener. Plants are growing better all over the Earth. And in fact, a recent study of just the impact of added CO2 on agriculture indicates that about $3.2 trillion worth of food crops have come solely from the increase in CO2 in the atmosphere from 1961 to 2011. And we can expect over $9 trillion more worth of food production agriculturally because of increased CO2 in the coming 50 years. I mean,
so
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
CO2 is a good thing, not
absolutely
a dangerous pollutant.
So why are they trying to kill us all by cutting down on CO2?
Well, I mean, your question maybe says more than you realize, because literally the whole thing, I believe, stems from fears of overpopulation and from the environmentalist, really religious commitment to the notion that human beings are no better than, have no higher priority than any other life form on Earth, and that because we use resources in ways that other life forms don't, we are basically a harm to the Earth. And so our population should be cut back. In fact, the top leaders of most of the large environmental organizations around the world, like Greenpeace and World Wildlife Fund and Worldwide Fund for Nature and so on, most of them tend to think that the optimum human population for the whole planet would be about, perhaps 500 million.
500 million? We only have 330 million in the U.S.
Yeah, well, 500 million would be about 1/14 of the current population. So, in other words, you would have to eliminate about 93% of the human race to reach that figure. Now, interestingly enough, just simply the current demographic trends, the rapid decline in birth rates around the world, have already led to shrinking populations in Europe and the former Soviet Union, all of those states. Russia is losing about 1 million people a year.
Wow.
Europe is losing about 900,000 a year. China will hit its peak population within the next two or three years and then begin to shrink rapidly. Japan is already losing population. All of the developed world is at below replacement rate in birth rate, and the developing world is rapidly reaching that. And demographers, the leading demographers in the world, now forecast that it is quite likely that without even adopting any government programs to try to push population control, human population in the world could shrink to as little as 300 million. 300 million. That's fewer than the United States.
Oh, yeah.
by the year 2300.
2300,
but
wow.
What's happening is that a lot of environmentalists really want to see a rapid shrinkage of the human race. And so they embrace policies like forcing us to switch from abundant, reliable, affordable fossil fuels mm-hmm. as our electricity source and our transportation energy source to very unreliable, very expensive renewable sources like wind and solar. And they know perfectly well that the result of that is to impoverish those who are not now poor and to trap in poverty those who are now poor. I mean, a great example of that happened a couple of years ago in the winter of 2011 through 12 in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Just for England and Wales, not even including Scotland. That was an exceptionally cold winter, and the British have been pursuing a policy of pushing for renewable fuels instead of fossil fuels
right.
for close to a decade now. Well, the British government, the UK government, estimates that about 28,000 more people died of hypothermia, that is, they froze to death,
right.
during that winter.
28,000.
Solely because the energy rates, the energy costs, had risen so much that people couldn't afford both their electric bills and their food.
Froze.
They decided to eat, and so they froze.
Oh, my goodness. I know they're
yeah.
big on wind farms, because I've read several articles about the big wind farms there in Great Britain and how expensive they were to put up, but how really ineffective they are in producing energy.
Yeah. The average cost per kilowatt hour of producing energy from wind runs 2 to 4 times as much as from coal or natural gas. For solar, it runs about 8 to 16 times as much. When you do that for wealthy people, hey, it's
they don't feel the pinch
of mm-hmm. discomfort. But
right.
Poor people on fixed
oh,
incomes,
yeah.
I mean, it can push them from on the edge of starvation or of freezing to death,
right?
To literally starving or freezing to death.
Oh my goodness! So you know there is a conflict between evangelical. Some there's you know some liberal groups out there that are. Evangelical groups that are pushing the environmental thing and, you know, pushing all the alternative fuel, alternative energy sources and all
yeah.
that stuff. So as evangelicals, as Christians, what should we do when it comes to the environment?
Well, first off, of course, we want to be good stewards
right.
ourselves. We want to take good care of the property that belongs to us. We want to respect property that belongs to others
mm-hmm.
and property that belongs to our own government and so on. We want to not waste, not throw out trash and so on. All
right.
of that, obviously, we should be doing. We should support wise policies, one of which is that, frankly, it is much better for the environment for people to be pretty wealthy than for them to be poor. Because when
right.
you are poor, when you're worried about putting food on the table, clothes on the back,
mm-hmm.
and a roof over the head, you frankly don't care about smog. You don't care
right.
about you know, fertilizer runoff into lakes and
mm-hmm.
streams. You don't care about global warming. You don't
you
care about
survive.
Anything like that. You just care
right.
about how can I feed my children
right.
tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, what we need to do is to promote policies that lead to rapid economic development, especially in the poorest parts of the world, sub-Saharan Africa,
mm-hmm.
parts of Latin America, Asia, and Oceania. And as those places become wealthier, then those people can afford to do what we've already done, which
right.
is we have cleaned up our environment tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be doing that. We should be, frankly, a lot of evangelicals need to be learning a great deal about this.
Yeah.
And I would invite them to our own website, cornwallalliance.org, as well as to the Cornwall Alliance on Facebook, and we're on Twitter as well, at Cornwall Stewards.
Cornwall Stewards on
yes.
Twitter? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot, because I know that as I was getting ready for this program, I found quite a few evangelical groups that are doing just doing the education part, but they're doing the education on the opposite side, just telling you know how bad man is, how we have to you know lower the population, and how you know basically we need to just become equal with the rest of the world because we are too privileged here in this country, and it's hurting the environment because of our quote-unquote privileged existence here in the U.S.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
that's very troubling that we have this conflict, and they seem to be very active. In fact, I also
yeah.
found out that here in Pennsylvania we have an affiliate for one of those groups. It's about 4 years old now, if I can find the name of it. It was, of course, it's based near one of the universities, so that kind of explains it all a lot there. Yeah. It's, Interfaith Power and Light.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
right.
We have one of those affiliates here, and I found it interesting that one of the members said, quote, there's no bigger moral issue facing humanity today, unquote, except, you know, speaking about the environment. That's troubling to me when a church group, when someone associated with a church says that's the biggest moral issue. Anyway,
That is really puzzling because,
yes.
and of course, I'm aware that they will say these things,
yeah.
but my goodness, there are so many ambiguous scientific questions and ambiguous economic questions related to this, whereas for things like you shall not steal, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not bear false witness, you shall have no other gods before me. I mean, these things are pretty morally clear.
I would think so.
pretty serious
I would
issues.
Think so, yes.
And in fact, I mean, if you just think about the amount of wasted money that has to be directed to preventing fraud, theft, and violence around our communities.
Yeah.
If people were paying attention to you shall not steal and you shall not murder and you shall not commit adultery, the benefit to the human race would be enormous.
It absolutely would.
What we can do reducing CO2 emissions.
Yeah, that's for sure. Wow. Give us your websites again, your website as well as the one for your sister organization.
Yeah, the Cornwall Alliance is at cornwallalliance.org. Our sister ministry, Churches and Villages Together, is at CV Together. We are on Facebook at Cornwall Alliance, and then also we're on Twitter at Cornwall Steward. That's at Cornwall Steward.
Okay, fantastic. I appreciate it, and you're just, you know, full of a lot of information. I do, and your websites have. I've been on your website quite a bit, and it has a lot of good information too to counter some of the misleading information that is out there that we hear constantly through the mainstream media. You know, the world's going to end because of all this. Oh, climate change, you know, now they're calling it climate change rather than global warming. People are realizing we had a really, really cold winter last year, and it wasn't global warming. So now it's climate change. Anyway, but I appreciate it, and you keep up the good work, and enjoy the nice warm weather down there in Florida.
Well, thanks very much, Diane, and the Lord bless your continued service.
Okay, thank you, and you take care.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.